But here we are Monday morning.
And then we'll return. We'll have our guest with us. I'm very excited to be chatting with her. It's been a long time since we've initially talked. And here we will be when we come back. I hope you'll be here as well. Dr. Judy Wood and more Frankly Speaking Radio when we return.
Unmatched, unafraid.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Frankly Speaking Radio.
Resistance is futile.
Good morning, and welcome, my friends, my foes, and everyone in between. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. It is Monday, and October 6th, 2008, about 5 minutes past 11 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone. Of course, I'm your host, Frank Whalen. So we're going to talk about something a little differently here now when we bring our guest up. The website for the show is www.franklyspeakingradio.com, franklyspeakingradio.com, including our latest addition to the Micro Effect family, 88.1 in Colorado. Thanks for joining us. We're excited that you're here. I know you'll have questions, because you should have questions, because the things we're going to talk about here are question-worthy. And there's a reason for that. Because we've been lied to, folks, plain and simple. Now, you know, anyone who will ever talk to you about September 11, 2001, what actually transpired, will probably do one of a few things. They will, A, parrot the official version of events directly back to you word for word verbatim. Because, again, a politician somewhere, sometime, got up on TV and spouted a few things, reinforced by another politician at another time spouting similar things, and for some reason, we become conditioned to accept their version of events as true, their words as factual, and their opinions as completely and totally gospel truth. I disagree wholeheartedly. So other people who might talk about September 11th will float out a bunch of things that may or may not be true. They will state it necessarily as fact, but that's that. So my point is this. My position on September 11, 2001 has always been this. I am absolutely unqualified on any level whatsoever to give you any information about September 11, 2001 or anything else for that matter. You might say, what? Why are we listening if you're not qualified? Because I'm not trying to be something I'm not. Am I intelligent? I'd like to think so. Do I have good insight? I hope so. Do I have discernment? Yes, I do. So maybe that in and of itself is enough. But the point is that if someone tries to entrap you and snare you and say, okay, you crazy tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorist, tell me what happened on September 11, 2001. It's tempting, isn't it, to jump right in there, to fall into that trap and say, oh, yes, let me tell you what happened. There's no way you could know that. There's no way you could know that. What you can do, if you contextualize it properly and honestly, you can say, to the best of my knowledge, here's what I do know. And just leave it at that. But they always want to push you more, and they always want to bury you down deep under speculations that you've presented as fact. Because that's just, unfortunately, it's not true. So my point is this. Whenever someone's asked me that, tell me what happened on September 11th, I'll say this. I can't tell you what happened, but I can tell you what didn't happen. And what didn't happen is the official version of events. And I think that's fairly accurate. I think that's honest. Right? I know the official version's a lie. It's a lot easier to spot a lie than it is to reconstruct an event that I was not a part of. Nor were you, for the most part. However, there are brilliant people out there. And we try to find them for you. It's another benefit, I suppose, to having a talk show. So we look for the smart people. We look for the really sharp people who have an unbelievable focus on the goal line. Whatever their particular subject matter is, they throw themselves into it and they know what they're talking about. And I was very, very pleased one of our listeners pointed this gal out to me. Her website, www.drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood.com. Dr. Judy Wood. And she is our guest here today. I'd like to welcome her to the program for the first time, hopefully not the last. Dr. Wood, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's a great pleasure, and I'm glad we were finally able to pin down the time. I know you're incredibly busy. And, you know, it's amazing to me. We talk about this all the time, about different events and whatnot and what significance these events have had on us as individuals. And while I do believe that it is important to, of course, highlight some evidentiary events such as September 11, 2001, in which at the very least we can agree that they knew something beforehand and did nothing to prevent it, if it was even possible. Now, of course, the nuts and bolts particulars of the event, you know, we're going to talk about here with you in a second. But first, tell us a little bit about your background and why September 11, 2001 was significant for you. What led you down this path?
What led me down this path is that what I saw happen on that day didn't make sense. Buildings don't unravel like a sweater.
Yeah.
Exactly what it looked like to me on TV. And then you think about how fast it went away. That was incredible.
And it really was.
I was actually in the faculty conference room at Clemson University where I was teaching, and I looked around the room with kind of a grin on my face, like, hey, you aren't going to fall for this joke, are you? You know, with that kind of appearance, because I
yeah, sure.
Pulling another Orson Welles War of the Worlds deal.
Yes.
And so to check that out, well, they said that the Pentagon was attacked. My parents live near the Pentagon, so I called up my mom to ask, do you see any fighter jets overhead? She looked out. Nope. Okay, must be a Orson Welles deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you'd assume, you know, the most secure airspace on the entire planet Earth would be secure airspace.
Correct. Especially after the, quote, attack, you'd see some kind of action up in the sky. But there wasn't any, so I think it's how people came to the initial information is to what kind of difficulty they had seeing it.
That's an excellent.
If you were traumatized by it, then you stay traumatized and don't want to look back, because to look back means you have to relive that pain.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't want to do that. So they just take whatever was told to them and move forward.
It's a great point. What was the reaction in that faculty room? I mean, did most people really buy into everything they were seeing?
Oh, yeah. And that was the scary thing. And I'm wondering to myself, am I insane? And so I had to do some sanity checks. You know, am I the insane one or are they? And I did some quick calculations about the timing and thought, well, no way. And later that became my billiard ball example. It's just a mental exercise for seeing what kind of timing you would sort of expect at a minimum. And if you hollowed out 9 out of every 10 floors, they're just hollow, and 1 out of every 10 floors would drop down, completely spatter into dust, and then the next floor would drop down, completely spatter into dust, that's at least 30 seconds. And so, okay, that doesn't make sense. If it's every single floor, floor by floor by floor, that's 100 seconds. And that's assuming that you had enough energy to break all of the supports at the exact same moment, pulverize all the material. There's not enough energy to go around for all of that.
Mm.
But just the timing alone, just looking at the timing, it just didn't add up.
That's an excellent point. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry. So I think that's a good way to introduce people to this, is this billiard ball example I have, because it gets away from the flying bodies, the, you know, horror scene, everything that was ingrained in us on that day to react to. So if you think of just innocent billiard balls and somebody dropping one off the roof, and then 10 stories below that, as soon as that ball passes, somebody can drop the next one, and then, you know, 10 stories below that, as soon as that red one passes, they can drop their yellow one, and so forth. And you can get your brain working then, because it's away from this other thing that people are kind of, I'll use the stiff term, brainwashed into reacting to. And that keeps people from thinking.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. And certainly there were a lot of, you know, really... Well, no pun intended, certainly, but a lot of moments that had a real impact on people, various things that they saw, and you're right, the bodies falling, you know, people peeking out of the impact crater, you know, I suppose, where the planes had hit, which I thought was very, very strange. I remember that distinctly, Judy, and I also remember, of course, hearing that these planes were so combustible and caused so much so many problems. They were so filled with fuel because they had just taken off, ready to make a cross-country flight, that there was so much jet fuel in these planes that that caused a fire of epic proportion, and that it was the fires themselves that brought the buildings down, when again, strangely enough, you know, from the place where the fire was located, you know, you would think even if that were the case, it would still be from the fire above would collapse. And I honestly anticipated, watching this whole thing go down and trying to conduct a radio show at the exact same time, I kind of figured that the buildings would snap off right where the impact was and, you know, the top part might fall and take out a few blocks. But clearly that's not what happened.
Hey, you saw the top chunk tipping over on Tower 2, and it never hit the ground.
Yeah.
It turned into powder before it hit the ground. But also, I stopped to think about airplane engines. When an airplane flies overhead, you don't feel a drip, drip, drip of melted steel going by, do you?
Mm, yeah, fair enough.
Jet engines fire up, and how long do they stay cooking on this fuel?
Oh, gosh.
So they burn the steel, and it doesn't melt their engines.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a very good point. And other than those two buildings, no fire, from what I understand, has ever destroyed a steel structure. So, you know, there's something else to consider, I suppose, another anomalous event.
Oh.
Well, let's back up a little bit here and talk about, you know, you're watching this whole thing go down and you're seeing all these things. Now, obviously, you have some ideas that perhaps are a little bit unconventional compared to most people in the truth movement. And I know that you've taken a beating. I know a lot of people have attacked your theories and your ideas. And I think that the very fact that people are so adamantly against, you know, what you're doing with your research, and the fact that your research is so incredible, so detailed, so sourced, that I think that there's something here maybe that people aren't seeing, or things that people are really afraid of.
Did you see a parallel with the actual day of 9/11, where people just reacted and they didn't stop to think?
Oh, yeah.
And so with my research, they're reacting as they were trained to react rather than stopping to think. And what I'd like people to do is stop and think.
Yes.
Because how did we get in this predicament to begin with? We turned over our thinking to somebody else.
Well said. We've allowed ourselves to be told what to think rather than being encouraged to think for ourselves, and I could not agree with you more.
And that's why I'm kind of stubborn about that. I won't tell somebody what the punchline is or what the end point is. I'll ask them questions that'll help them think about what the answer might be.
Mm.
Like my toasted car page. You know, why are all the windows missing and nothing else damaged? How did the wing mirror of the fire truck, all the wing mirrors were broken, but there's no stab wounds through the mirror mount?
Hmm.
If you stop and you think...
I'm sorry. I was just going to backtrack a little bit, just, you know, in case some of that stuff is over some people's heads.
Okay.
Okay, so basically, a lot of people would look at your research page and say, well, I don't really understand what she's saying. Now, you know, some people would assume that you're talking about some sort of laser beam from outer space. Aliens flew over and zapped it, and the buildings collapsed and crumbled. That's not what you're saying at all, is it?
No. No, I'm saying it's energy. It wasn't... it was directed energy. It wasn't kinetic energy devices.
Yes.
Kinetic energy devices are like bullets, bombs, things of that sort. Things that physically move and hit something and go bang.
Hmm.
But directed energy, you know, I use the very most general sense of this, is energy that is directed and is used as a weapon. So I call that directed energy weapon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the serial number is on the gizmo that was used. I don't know who did it.
Yeah.
But it was energy that was directed, and obviously it was a weapon.
And when you first started looking into this, you know, what in particular made you think, I mean, obviously you mentioned the method of the collapse of the building was certainly significant, but what else highlighted to you that this was something worth exploring and looking into?
Well, to tell you the truth, on 9/11, I was a fairly new faculty. I'm worried about keeping my job.
Sure.
With everyone giving you the evil eye, you know, peer pressure really kicks in. And I'm wondering why nobody else is looking into this, but, well, you know, you assume somebody else is going to be looking into this. So you try to put it aside and go on with your stuff. And remember the 2000 election, the presidential selection, there were problems with the Florida vote. But we were told, oh, we weren't going to fix this one, but we'll fix the next one. Okay, the grown-ups are going to take care of it for us. So from the 2004 presidential selection, we had a repeat and worse. It went belly up at, what, 1:30 in the morning, just like the time before? At that moment, I realized nobody else was going to fix it. I realized it's the job of each one of us. We're citizens of this country. It's our job to defend and protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign or domestic.
An excellent point. I like that you call it a presidential selection because it implies what we all know at this point. I think that you know, these things are done in advance. You know, there's no surprise there, and there's no will of the people being exercised in any capacity. Because I do think, like you do, I assume, Judy, that you know, again, we like to be lied to because the lie is comforting and the truth is a place of discomfort, and a lot of people don't like to they don't like to be challenged.
And the truth that I have realized through my research is horrendous. It's so horrendous that it's like, I don't want to look at it. I don't want to think about it. But then pretty soon I realize that we need to. But it's easier for me, I guess, just looking at the physical evidence.
Sure.
And then I've not had to worry about the rest because I'm just determining what is and what has happened. But then once you start looking at the physical evidence, you realize it doesn't need to be used as a weapon. It can be used for good things. I have talked about energy, directed energy. It doesn't have to be used as a weapon.
Wow.
And I think that's a big thing to remember, that that's the good in this, and it keeps us all going.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great point, and certainly, just like so many other things, you know, you look at something that's invented inadvertently or something, or perhaps being conceived of as a benefit to humanity. Nikola Tesla, for example, a great many of the things that he had done, such as basically broadcasting electricity and various things like that, dealing with resonance and aspects like that, it was amazing. And of course, you know, here, you know, he passes on basically destitute, after being, you know, harassed and treated poorly for the majority of his life, and then he passes on, and then all of his patents are basically labeled national security secrets, and they're classified. But yet, you know this, I know this, I think most of the listeners do as well. These things, whenever they show any promise whatsoever, they never go away, and usually they are twisted and turned and applied to warfare, to weaponry, some sort of offensive or defensive capabilities, and I think that's what you're referring to here in terms of September 11th, 2001.
Yes. And thank goodness for people like John Hutchison, who refuses to work for the military. And he's done this this research he's worked on his own, totally outside of the government's control, and replicated a lot of Nikola Tesla's work. So otherwise, we wouldn't have such verification.
Yes.
It's pretty wonderful. I've got pictures on my website of specimens that he has tested, and you can look at them side by side with what we see from the World Trade Center, and it's a striking resemblance of about every phenomena there is.
Wow. Well, it's a fantastic website. And I should point out to people again, it's www.drjudywood.com. And there is really a heck of a lot of information there. It's amazing, Dr. Wood, how much you have. And what I'd like to do, I know we're coming up on a break here, but when we come back, what I'd like to do is maybe talk about, you know, again, the, I suppose you could say, aspects of a directed energy weapon, how they work, what the signatures look like, various things that people can identify, and then maybe apply those characteristics to the evidence left behind at the World Trade Center sites and so on and so forth, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Okay, sounds good. Folks, please stay with us. Our special guest today is Dr. Judy Wood. Her website, drjudywood.com. I'd encourage you to go there. Spend some time, too. You're going to see an incredible amount of research that she's done. It's really comprehensive, and we'll try to, you know, do our best to dumb it down. Luckily, you have a talk show host here who likes things to be simplified, and we'll do that, of course, when we return with our special guest here today. More Frankly Speaking Radio as well when we return.
You are listening to The Micro Effect. Micro broadcasters covering 194,000 square miles and bringing the people's voice to little towns all across America.
Frankly Speaking Radio.
I think voting is great. I just didn't care this time because it was between a giant douche and a turd sandwich.
But don't you know? It's always between a giant douche and a turd sandwich. Nearly every election since the beginning of time has been between some douche and some turd. They're the only people who suck up enough to make it that far in politics.
On the Micro Effect Broadcasting Network.
I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Where women go and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder?
Welcome back to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Well, and I'm excited you're here. It's, of course, Monday, October 6th, 2008, 11:34 a.m. here in the Central Time Zone. And this hour, by the way, being brought to you by our good friends at International Health, your vital resource for wellness solutions. They have a wide variety of products there, but not an overwhelming amount because, again, Glenn Parnham, the founder of International Health, who has over 20 years of experience as a clinical researcher, has picked and chosen very, very carefully anything that he deems worthy to be carried there. So there's not a huge list, but it is comprehensive. And again, it requires a little bit of research. Their website is www.ihsite.com, ihsite.com. There's a video explanation for everything, and I encourage you to check it out. But start out by looking into the Super Silver. Start out by looking into the Stem Enhance products, because I think you'll find a stunning, stunning amount of information there that can really be helpful and useful to all of us. I know that I'm a big fan of everything they carry, but again, you have to determine what your needs are and what your solutions need to be. Give them a call, ask them your questions, request more information be sent to you, DVDs, CDs, and such, also documents. You can also, if you say you heard it here on Frankly Speaking Radio, you can request a free telephone consultation with Glenn Parnham, the founder of International Health. It's very, very easy to do. You can also place orders by dialing 800-974-1879. That's 800-974-1879. We ask you to continue to support International Health and all the sponsors and advertisers that make this show and this network possible. Website for the show is franklyspeakingradio.com. Website for the network, www.themicroeffectlive.com. And our toll-free phone number for you to ask your own questions from our guest here today is 888-747-1968. That's 888-747-1968. And let's get back to her. Her name, Dr. Judy Wood. The website, drjudywood.com. Welcome back, Dr. Wood, and thank you again so much for your time today.
And thanks again for having me here.
I'm enjoying it very, very much, as I did your website as well. Just a stunning amount of information. And again, I'm trying to dumb it down for a talk show host level because clearly I'm not in any way, shape, or form, as I said, qualified or, you know, intelligent even for the most part. But I'm doing my best, and I count on people like you to keep me in the loop. So let's start out with directed energy. What is it, and what are its characteristics of its usage?
Well, I've just added a link to my homepage near the top.
Okay.
A new page that I'm working on called Cliff Notes. It's a sampling of all sorts of pictures from all different articles I have on my site, and where, you know, the pictures that inspired me to think how I did.
Okay.
And
wonderful.
If you go to that page, there's a shortcut at the top. It'll load faster in the future because I'll make thumbnails. But that first picture that you see is of a police car. I call it toasted. And I mean by toasted is just a generic term for a car that's been totaled. It's no longer useful. You can't fix it. It's toast. It's history. It's been toasted. We don't know how it got this way, and let's not assume that it burned up. We won't say a burnt car.
Yes.
But if you look at it, you have the door sagging, like wilted, and the frames around the windows, they're just flopped over, wilted.
Wow.
And then you see a part, a millimeter to the right, a new wax job.
Yeah.
This
You're
one
right.
isn't so easy to see, but the car below that, figure three, the back half of that vehicle, it looks like a new wax job. It's shiny.
Wow.
But then you see the inside extremely rusted. Why is the inside of the car rusted?
Yeah.
How did it get weathered? So this is what got me thinking about energy beams. This picture of the police car over an FDR drive, which is about a mile east of the World Trade Center complex. It's over on the East River. We're looking at Queens on the other side.
Wow.
So why would it be toasted over there? Or did
That's
it get
a great question.
There? There's enough vehicles that I'm convinced that they weren't towed there. They weren't all towed there. And there's marks in the pavement where it looks like the car's had a collision, and then they were just scraped off the road.
Wow.
There's a number of them. There's over 1,400 cars that could still be counted as cars that were towed away in the cleanup, that were toasted. That's quite a few cars.
Yeah, it really is.
And then you start noticing that it likes to eat door handles. It likes to eat engine blocks. And figure two, you can see the car on the very right still has its engine lid, but there's nothing underneath the lid of the engine.
Hmm.
And absolutely no window glass.
That's very odd. Let's discuss this a little further. For those who maybe aren't able to follow along while we're discussing things, what we're seeing here on your website here, drjudywood.com, is really a whole series of vehicles which look like, I don't even know how to describe it. It looks like that there's a portion of them that was burned very, very badly, like you said, melted. Yet in other situations, like you said, aspects, certain parts of the vehicle, you can see a clear and distinct line going down, and other parts of the vehicle are not touched at all. So, is this like a microwave? I mean, what are we looking at here?
Well, some sort of an energy beam. My background is in optics and interferometry, which is interfering different beams.
Okay.
My background mainly is in visual range, but you know that the same things can happen in the non-visual range.
Mm-hmm.
So, using the visual range as a mental image, where you interfere two beams of light, coherent beams of light, you can get walls of constructive and destructive interference, but you can also arrange it, like if they're parallel, they can completely cancel. So you have the constructive interference means that you multiply the effect, and destructive means they cancel. So how you could have a wax job right next to a toasted part,
yeah,
that would explain it.
Wow.
And if there's some kind of weird beams that reflect around, by themselves they may not do it. It's when they get together that the effects could happen. So you could have one beam going down the canyons of New York City, you know, the buildings, another beam going down another one, and then where they intersect, But why just the cars and why not the bridge support?
Yeah.
Well, one of them's grounded and one of them isn't.
Oh, wow.
Why
That's
are the people affected and, you know, buildings aren't?
Yeah.
And then if we notice the World Trade Center, it goes right down to almost the ground, but it's where those columns go into the ground that are left standing.
Yes.
So it's consistent
Interesting.
With that.
So, in essence, what we're looking at here is that if a directed energy weapon were targeted against the World Trade Center buildings, and it would take, like you said, two beams intersecting, basically, that what would happen, I presume, is that the steel would melt in the building.
No.
And that it would slowly, well, perhaps not slowly, but it would basically melt away the steel and allow this building to collapse in the manner that it did. Is that fairly accurate?
Nope.
Okay.
you're assuming heat.
Yeah.
After we look at the evidence, we'll see that it wasn't heat involved. But let's look at another analogy. Let's look at photographic emulsion on paper.
Okay.
Before you knew about photographic film, if you saw an image of somebody on a piece of paper, you'd say, wow, it took an awful lot of burning to get that image burned in there.
Yeah, that's true.
But the photographic emulsion is a chemical reaction. I'm not saying this necessarily is, but the light is just the trigger.
Okay.
And where the reaction happens faster or slower or more or less in different areas of the picture depending on the amount of light. The light doesn't provide really a significant amount of energy. It's just the trigger for the chemical reaction. And the photographic emulsion. There's a whole lot of variables, too. There's exposure time, there's developer, there's fast film speed, slow film speed. And those analogies might be useful here. But again, they're very distant analogies, but they are good analogies with something we're familiar with.
Okay.
And I'm not saying it's necessarily just two beams. But there's different energy fields that interfere. And things can happen.
Interesting.
And they, and well, those people notice, like the door handles, you know, and engine
yes.
blocks, it affects different materials in different ways. That's another
yes.
hallmark of energy. Hey, we're all familiar with what happens if you put a cup of water in your microwave oven and you set it on a paper towel.
Yeah.
Nothing happens to the paper towel.
True.
And, we saw a lot of paper floating around New York City.
Yes, we did. Interesting. Well, explain what all this means then. I mean, as far as the towers and the implications there, because clearly I'm off the mark. So set me straight a little bit, if you would.
Well, if you, let's see, there's a section of this that talks about lack of high heat. That's number D. So if you click
okay.
on D... you'll see figure 17 is a familiar picture. This guy running down the street with a big wall of cloud chasing after him.
Yeah.
After the cloud went past and mowed everybody down, he had people covered with dust. He
mm-hmm.
didn't have burned bodies.
Hmm.
So that
That's
cloud
true.
Was not hot. And we've heard this rumor of molten metal in the basement.
Yes.
There's a picture here that was taken on the 18th of September.
Okay.
And it's supposedly where the hottest location is with that USGS map that doesn't add up. And these guys are down in the basement of Tower 2, standing in a puddle.
Hmm.
That water isn't steam even. And there was a water main that broke on West Street in the afternoon of 9/11, and you have somebody wading out into it. They're not burning, and you don't have a steam explosion. So this material is not hot, but it looks like steam, but it's not steam. That's why I call it fumes.
Yeah.
And
now this would be figures 21, 22, 24, and 25, correct?
Correct. In that area, it looks like steam, but it's not.
Yeah.
And that I call these generically, I call them diggers. You know, the front end loaders or the
yes
power shovels. In figure 22, you'll see that this has a control arm that's extended. It's mm-hmm. hydraulics. And on the right is a temperature viscosity diagram. It doesn't go above 100 degrees centigrade because permanent damage happens to hydraulic equipment above 82 degrees centigrade.
Oh, wow.
So that digger can't be hot. And what it's picking up, I call that the Cheeto picture because it looks like a Cheeto laying on the ground. It looks
yeah.
like glowing hot, but that's our assumption because what we're familiar with is that when things glow, they must be hot.
Yeah.
But there could be another reason why it's glowing. When these energy fields interfere, they cause luminescence at room temperature.
Wow.
That was another thing that really grabbed my attention with John Hutchison's work.
Yeah.
One of the classic... signs of it. And these fellows working with their cutting torches in figure 21, they have an acetylene torch with a hose running across that material.
Yes.
Can it be all that hot to be laying their acetylene torch and the rubber hose on top of it?
Ah, that's a great point, too.
And if it's as
wow.
hot as what looks like steam, but we now
yes.
know it cannot be hot. Why are they watering it down? If it were hot, water would make more steam. But what
yes,
I see in photos is that the water suppresses the fuming.
How interesting.
You know what else suppresses the fuming?
What's that?
Earth.
And that leads us to section E.
Yeah.
Let me, before we go any further... Let me explain to people how to find what it is we're talking about.
Yeah.
Folks, type in drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood.com. As you scroll down, you see a flashing in big blue letters. It says Cliff's Notes, or Cliff Notes, and you'll see it. It's you know, fairly sizable, and it's close to the top. But I know there's so many different things, and I'm easily distracted, so it's very easily to click on something else. But what we're going through here is, again, a very, very simplistic, bare-bones explanation of what we're talking about. And we're now on E, which is dirt, figures 26, 27, 28. Please go ahead, Dr. Wood.
Not in the right order yet, but if you skip down to K, that's
okay.
a good one. At any of these, you can, right above the blue bar, there's a little tiny link for index, and that'll take you up to the top so you can try again for a different section if you want.
Okay.
So, in section K, we have this photo. If you click on it, you get a larger photo. I call this the fuzzball intersection. This is one of the most important pictures I came across. We're about a block north of the WTC complex. Slightly upwind, and it's about 15 minutes after Tower 1 went poof. And I say the towers go poof because they didn't collapse. It would take much longer for them to collapse. They went away. It turned into dust, went poof. So here we are about a block north, and you can look up and see blue sky. Nice
yeah.
blue sky up there. And then you look around and you see a lot of paper and dust on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that paper and dust settled out really fast. But if you look
yeah.
carefully at the feet of some of these policemen, you see fuzzballs. Very, very fine dust coming up. How could dust that fine settle out of the air that fast?
That's an excellent question.
I believe this indicates that we had coarse dust land, and it broke down into finer dust.
So, again, attempting to dumb this down so even a talk show host can understand, what you're saying here is that this dust itself is active. It's breaking down as we speak, you know, as this was going on. It was actually changing itself. Is that accurate?
Yes. And okay. If you look at figure 53 and 54, you can see these people have just come out of their hiding places.
Yeah.
But look at the super fine dust coming up from their feet.
Oh, especially 54, sure.
That dust didn't come out of the air that fast. And another thing interesting is how red these guys' faces are. But if you look over at figures 56 and 57, in 57, the sunlight just starts coming through, and you start noticing that this fuming of the ground, this very fine dust, is coming up all by itself now. It's not just around the feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty clear.
And why would it be coming up that fast? Well, immediately they brought out the street cleaners and started scrubbing the streets. And people are going to start asking questions, you know. You can't have that fuming coming up.
Yeah.
And it really struck me that the streets were cleaned before they started looking for survivors.
Hmm. Yeah, that is troubling.
There's some pictures on here someplace. Let's see if I can find the...
Okay.
Section H. That's the scrub streets.
Okay.
And it was on the 14th. If you blow that picture up and you look at the grooves in the pavement, it looks like somebody took a toothbrush and scrubbed out the grooves. That's West Street. Right about at that intersection, the fuzzball intersection.
Wow.
So, okay.
That's very interesting.
You have this fuming coming up from the streets. What do you do with the lawn?
As far as...
You can't bring the street sweepers in and have them scrub the lawn.
Right, people's yards. I don't know how many yards there are in New York City, but yeah, inevitably there's going to be some grassy areas.
The World Financial Center, it's right across from where Tower 2 was.
Oh.
It was all covered with grass beforehand.
Okay.
That's going to be fuming.
Hmm.
If you go to Section E, that's the dirt section, then you find out how they kept the lawns from fuming. You see brand new potting soil dumped on that lawn.
Wow. So, let's explore this a little bit. So, in essence, what you're saying here is that the coarse dust, even after, you know, the buildings were demolished, in essence, this coarse dust continued to have a chemical reaction of sorts, breaking down into fine dust, and that fine dust, again, is so fine that it'll basically be stirred up by anything. It'll look like it's steaming, I suppose, but you say fumes, in essence. And in order to do that, in order to, I guess, hide some of this evidence, they went and cleaned the streets, and then, of course, for the grassy areas, they brought in dirt. And I presume that the dirt is to, I guess, cover up this evidence as well.
Right, wet dirt will sort of mop it up. It's used as a sponge. It's used to clean up toxic spills.
Oh,
I think we're all familiar with putting kitty litter on oil spills in the garage.
Yes.
So think of it kind of like that.
Wow.
And some of the earliest pictures, the very first pictures that FEMA posted are dated the 13th of September. And figure 27 is one of those pictures. And if you click on it, you'll get a larger picture. And you can see that dirt is neatly placed. It kind of looks like it brought in from a landfill.
Yeah. Wow.
And laid down in piles. And speaking of
now I'm sorry. I was just going to say, for those, again, who aren't seeing this, what we're seeing, you have to follow along here. But in this photo, Dr. Wood, I mean, what we've got, it seems pretty clear. You've got a bunch of debris, And then, you know, there's not mounds of soil inside the World Trade Center, so where did it come from? They just came and they dumped it all over the debris?
That's what it looks like. It looks like it
It does.
Fill.
Yeah, it's not clean dirt by any means.
But it's topsoil-type dirt.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, heavy clay. Another thing interesting about this picture, if we look straight across over sort of on the left side of the image, that is the full height of what remains of Tower 1. And
wow.
And that got bigger with time. As they laid on more dirt, that pile got taller.
Wow.
Actually, it's taller.
Yeah, well, you can't run the street sweeper over piles of debris, so I guess that's an option.
Right, and you notice where that guy's standing off in the distance?
You
see some fuming kind of at his feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not hot. He wouldn't be standing there if it were hot. But see where the fresh dirt is, you don't see fuming.
You're exactly right.
Let us go to figure 28, which was from a year ago.
Okay.
Look at all this fresh dirt still coming in to the site.
Wow.
The dirt comes in, the dirt goes out.
Yeah, well, I guess looking at this, oh, wow, we're up to a break already, it seems. But looking at this, Dr. Wood, you know, a lot of people might say, well, clearly they're just, you know, they're excavating out the debris, but I agree with you. It almost looks like they've taken in some dirt, they've mixed some things up, and now they're removing that dirt that has now been, I presume, contaminated to a certain degree. Is contamination a good word?
Yep, like changing diapers.
Okay. Wow. Let me ask you to hang on. Thank God we've got another hour, because I think we're barely scratching the surface here with our special guest today, Dr. Judy Wood. Go and see her website, drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood.com. Click on Cliff Notes and follow along with us here today. This is just captivating. We'll be right back with our third and final hour and, of course, more Frankly Speaking Radio when we return.
Listening to Frankly Speaking Radio.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
With your host, Frank Whalen.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Frank Whalen.
I think fast, I talk fast. And I need you guys to act this if you want to get out of this.
You actually were telling the truth.
I do that quite a lot. Your people are always surprised.
You never know when you might need them.
I am the smartest man alive!
Frankly Speaking Radio.
We must have the pressure.
Unconventional, unmatched, unafraid.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Government should be afraid of their people.
Frankly Speaking Radio.
Resistance is futile.
Good afternoon, and welcome back, folks. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whalen, and, amazed by our guest here today. Let's start out with the basics, though. First things first. It is Monday, October 6, 2008. It is about 5 minutes past noon here in the Central Time Zone. Our website for the show is www.franklyspeakingradio.com. It's franklyspeakingradio.com. And there's a great deal of information there, links to guests, links to sponsors, advertisers, all manner of things, news, archived by subject, archived by date. It's all there courtesy of Webmaster James. Remember, it is his website, not mine, and he honors us with content from the show. And we appreciate him and hope you support all of his hard work. Give the guy a pat on the back. He certainly deserves it for his tireless efforts over the last 5 or 6 years at this point. The website for the network, brand new, you may have noticed. It's been changed, and I think it's fantastic. www.themicroeffectlive.com. There's information there on how to listen, such as internet options, satellite frequencies, AM and FM stations around the country, including our brand new one that just identified themselves to us. We appreciate that. 88.1 in Colorado. Welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. Certainly a lot there to digest there at the microeffectlive.com, but there is access to the archives, which is, again, everything that's ever been recorded since the archives were conceived, and we urge you to, of course, partake in that. It's a limitless amount of information that's available to you. And again, if you're trying to convey some of these things to people to wake them up, understand that it's always much better to hear it from the person directly, which is why we have guests on the show, and of course you access the archives, burn some CDs, send some interviews around. It's really a fantastic resource and opportunity for you. So please, by all means, do this. And also, if you can, we really, really appreciate any support you can offer to us financially. There is a donation tab there that takes you through PayPal. No amount too small. Any amount will help. So even if it's a dollar or, you know, whatever the case may be, it is greatly, greatly appreciated. If you would prefer to send something in the mail, here's that address. P.O. Box 164, Kamiah, Idaho, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho is ID, 83536. You can, of course, use your discretion, whatever you think. But these things are helpful because, again, as we had talked earlier and many, many times in the past, shows like this, networks like this, we challenge the conventional wisdom, if that's what you want to call it, wisdom, of certain things. And that's what our guest is doing here as well. And, of course, it leaves us all open to attacks, a lot of vitriolic comments by people who just don't want other people thinking differently than they do. And I hate that. I really do. It's very elitist, and it's unfortunately the problems that we have to, one of the big things we have to fight against, folks. So we're all doing what we can, and we're trying to keep it, again, open to a realm of possibilities, because I think that we've all lived long enough to know that even things that seemed impossible at one point are not. Improbable? Perhaps. Impossible? Nothing is impossible. So many things should have changed the way we think at this point in our lives. And if not, keep challenging yourself. You'll find something. And we're talking about that with our guest here today. We'll get back to her in just a second. First things first, if you have questions, this is the final hour for you to dial them in. 888-747-1968. That's 888-747-1968. And our special guest today has been researching this, obviously, since day one. We're talking about September 11, 2001. We're talking about the hard work of an incredible researcher whose material, just in scope and breadth alone, is astounding. And again, looking at this from a visual perspective, because that's really what's going to sink in. That's what's going to hit people. That's what's going to make an impact. You can talk and theorize and get very specific with the scientific applications of certain things like directed energy. However, when you start looking at the pictures, you have to say to yourself, wait a minute here. This couldn't have happened from an airplane. This couldn't have happened from a fire. This couldn't have happened from this. And that's what we're talking about. Our guest's website is www.drjudywood.com. And then if you go there to the homepage, you'll see in flashing blue letters, Cliff Notes. Click there, and you can follow along with us. They're all organized by alphabetic letter. And you can follow along with where we are at. And, of course, we will bounce around periodically. But without further ado, let me welcome back our special guest here today, Dr. Judy Wood. Judy, again, thank you so much. This is really mind-boggling.
Well, thanks for being willing to look at it.
Oh, gosh, of course. One of the things I guess I would classify being wise or even intelligent as knowing for a fact what it is I don't know. And that's what I try to do. And again, when you look at September 11, 2001, we've heard so many stories about, you know, thermite and various rationalizations for the way the buildings fell. Because again, this should be pretty definitive as a question mark in people's minds. I've never been convinced by anything I've heard, you know, in the past. So I'm certainly open to this, and I think, you know, with all the things we've seen about weather modifications, scalar weapons, I mean, how can we rule these things out?
This is true, and we're starting to, they're gradually warming us up to the idea that such things exist. And if they're telling us about them, we know they've existed for at least 20 years.
Absolutely.
I've got a quote at the top of this website, or this webpage. To acquire knowledge, one must study, but to acquire wisdom, one must observe.
I like that.
And we need to observe what happened and what's happened since 9/11. Let's go to Section B, Dustification.
Okay.
It's near the top.
Yes.
That's one of the basic images to look at. That first one, figure five, that does not look like a collapse.
No, it doesn't.
And there's a graphic that continually repeats where you see the building is just dissolving as it flies through the air. The steel looks like an Alka-Seltzer tablet.
Wow.
If something
hits
against something else, it turns to dust at that position. But this is something that's changing as it moves through the air.
Yeah.
If it was a bomb, you know, splits things into chunks, and the chunks go flying, and they stay as chunks.
Yeah.
There's something else very weird going on here. Let me draw your attention to figure seven.
Okay.
And click on that one and make a larger image of it if you can.
Sure. All right.
If you notice on that, the white fumes kind of go south and up.
We're
in the upper atmosphere. It kind of goes in a straight line, then there's a kink in it, and it sort of then fluffs out, kind of wafts away.
You can see that it's been caught by the wind as it gets up higher.
Yeah, it's like there's a different jet stream or something at a higher elevation. But if you look down there at ground level and out over the Hudson, which is to the left or to the west, you'll see black fumes. So we have white fumes and black fumes separated and going in different directions.
That is interesting. I presume you'll make sense of this for us.
Well, it leads to more. It shows that there's something, like maybe one was from, I call it the smudge pot. I won't say fire, but, you know, something making black smoke. Maybe that is regular black smoke and the white is something different. But whatever it is, it's two different processes. And that takes us to something else. I wanted to get some better images of that. Let's get some better satellite images.
Yeah.
How about some weather satellite images? And if you go to section V, weather, you'll see what I saw when I went looking for satellite images.
Huh.
Like, holy cow.
Yeah.
What is that?
What is that?
It's a hurricane.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but at the same time, I guess we're all pretty distracted. Was there a hurricane?
Yes, and it was, if you look at the track down below, like figure 147.
Yeah.
You can see it aimed straight towards New York City.
Yeah.
Until 9/11, and it stopped. Then that afternoon, it turned around and headed out of town.
What? What does this mean?
It doesn't look like it'd be just a happenstance coincidence.
No.
And why weren't we told about it? If you look at figure 146,
yeah,
the pink line is the pressure, air pressure inside the hurricane.
Yeah.
Notice it was constant for almost 24 hours. And then the wind speed, that's the red line, was constant for 24 hours.
Yeah.
The blue line is approximately proportional to the distance from New York City. And you can see it comes, stays pretty much a constant distance, and then it starts moving away.
Wow.
That measurement is from the square root of the sum of the squares for the longitude and latitude. So it's an approximation.
Okay.
But it's a good indication of whether or not it's getting closer or further away. So it's pretty much at a constant distance from New York City, constant airspeed, constant pressure, like a controlled environment.
Yeah. Well, this opens up a whole new vista of questions in my mind, because quite simply, what this indicates is that, again, these are the weather modification things that we've seen in action over the last, well, apparently, 7.5 years.
If you
I assume that these directed energy weapons were specifically targeting the World Trade Center. So that implies that the weather aspect, the weather component that you're showing us here in these stunning satellite images, what that indicates is that it was almost a byproduct of the, I suppose, of the weapons, the directed energy weapons, that caused this hurricane to, again, be pushed away.
Mm-mm.
No.
No. First, let me point out some fun aspects of this. Look at the eye of this hurricane in figure 143.
Yes.
It's mm-hmm. like a pentagon shape.
It is very odd.
And those worms in the middle.
It's very strange.
If you look at the section right below this, section W,
yeah,
I began looking at hurricanes and tornadoes and realizing how much they have in common.
Okay.
Like the structure of them. You got mm-hmm. something spinning up the column and then a big flat plate spinning around up above. And you get arcing between that top plate and the ground. Like
okay.
there's a potential in there. Kind of like a big Tesla coil.
Hmm. So, explain to me then the connection there between this particular hurricane on September 11, 2001, to the events we saw in the city.
I'm saying it's a huge Tesla coil. It creates field effects.
Uh-huh.
I'll be adding some more figures to this. Maybe we should go up and look at section S, Hutchison effect.
Okay. All right.
The first picture you see in front of WFC1, somebody had a parking problem. They parked the car upside down in front of the car that's toasted. You see the car that's upside down? It's kind of weird, just upside down. And the figure on the right, I'll get labels in later, is sitting on the fence.
Yes.
That's from either tornado or hurricane.
Okay.
That car did not tumble there. It was levitated and set down.
Wow.
Now look at figures 106 and 107. I don't know
okay.
if I have the big images in there yet. Those two are from Hurricane Andrew in Florida.
Okay.
You have
mm-hmm.
a tumefort through a palm tree, and you have a plywood through a palm tree.
Yeah, that's weird.
We've heard of straw through trees.
Yes.
Now let's look at figure 108, 109, 110. Those are from the World Trade Center. We have paper files from a file cabinet. Then
yeah.
there's something they call the meteorite, where you have paper, you can still read the labels on it.
Yeah.
Various materials blob together. And the line below that is some of John Hutchison's work. On the far right, you have a butter knife embedded in aluminum. And the two middle pictures are of a piece of wood, W-O-D, in aluminum. If you had poured molten aluminum over the wood would have burned up.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And in figure 111, you have a penny embedded in aluminum.
Wow.
These are just
okay.
different materials.
Yeah. Explain the Hutchison effect, please.
It's interference of different kinds of energy, radio frequency, sometimes microwave. Electrostatic. There's different ways that John has done it, and the Tesla interfered beams to get various effects. But I don't know if Tesla actually did levitation, but John Hutchison in 1979 discovered, when trying to replicate some of Nikola Tesla's work, discovered it caused levitation, interfering these different energy fields.
Yeah.
Well, if it destroys material. Figure 115 is one of the ones that grabs my attention. the most.
Oh, yeah. These are amazing.
Explodes outward. And that was the first time I had an explanation for what I saw in that tipping top of Building 2.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about how water turns into steam, it suddenly expands in volume by 1,600 times when it turns from water to steam. It's like all the molecules suddenly repel each other. That's why you get explosions. Now, how do you get a material that where all the molecules are attracted to each other, like a block of aluminum, suddenly it appears, like in Figure 116, 117, it appears that suddenly all of the molecules suddenly start repelling each other. And it's like the building turns into a type of steam.
Yeah.
And then Figure 118 was the first time I had an explanation for a phenomenon that I'd noticed a year earlier, which was the peeling effect. You see on the door of that police truck,
mm-hmm.
might have to blow it up. It's not a laminated door, but it's peeled apart, split thickness. Just like John Hutchison's aluminum sample.
Wow.
And the weird things that look like fires that we had, car fires and so forth around Grand Central, John Hutchison has reproduced that. There's this little toy boat he has that you get fires dancing all around the boat. What's it burning?
An excellent point.
122 and 123. 122 is a Red Bull can with a hole toasted through it. It had been used for levitation for a while, flying cans, but then it got wounded. And to me, it looks a whole lot like that hazmat truck that's parked in front of WTC-6
mm-hmm.
with toasted holes in it. Those are from damage from projectiles in that hazmat truck.
Yeah.
124 and 125... 125 is from the WTC. It's in Hangar mm-hmm. 17, one of those curled-up beams.
Yes.
124 is a solid bar of copper, like 2 or 3 inches in diameter, that John Hutchison found curled up when he turned on his gizmo. And the same with 126. That's molybdenum.
Yes.
And then we find this horseshoe-shaped steel beam. It's not buckled, it's curved.
Yeah.
A lot of similarities in that
128.
That one is a particular notice. This was in the Bankers Trust building across the street from Tower 2.
Mm-hmm.
That gash, it was said that there were no fires in that building. Then how did this happen? That beam that's kind of sticking down in the middle, just to the left of center.
Yeah.
It looks like Swiss cheese.
Yeah, it's twisted and melted and looks a little burned even.
Or if somebody tried curling it like a package ribbon.
Yeah.
You know when you curl a ribbon, you distort one side of it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it curls. Where you get a human hair and scrape your fingernail down it, it'll curl up.
Yes.
Or if you hold over match, what you're doing is affecting the characteristics on one surface. So perhaps there's some type of energy field that causes that for the same reason.
Wow.
That's why John finds the curling.
Yeah. This is truly astounding, and I think... You know, these examples really, really drive this home. Let me jump into the phone lines here, if that's okay with you, Dr. Wood.
Okay.
Okay. And then, obviously, we'll be up to a break, I'm sure, at that point. But anyway, folks, our phone number is 888-747-1968. Sheldon in Arizona, welcome to the show.
Hi, Frank. I just wanted to throw in something here quick. We all remember
Please.
How... clear the sky was around New York City the day we
yes.
the event happened, but if you check Judy's research there, you'll see that various airports reported rain and dry thunder. Now, this would be caused by the field effects, probably from the hurricane, right, Judy?
Yes. It's like when you have a Tesla coil, you have this field around it. And how we sense field effects, I think you know, anybody, just about anybody with arthritis talks about being able to know when a storm is coming.
Mm-hmm.
They're sensing something. And birds know, you know, to go hide out someplace.
Yes.
Something that they feel is coming. And people often feel storms, especially if it's like right over there. Even if it isn't raining on you yet.
Keep in mind that they were studying this hurricane for 2 weeks before it was even, you know, classified as a tropical storm. NASA and some universities were studying it before it even formed. And the fact that they didn't alert New York City residents about this hurricane is pretty implicating to the media because, you know, that thing headed right towards the city and parked itself there. And, you know, we got the possibility of storm surge in the cities at, you know, pretty close to sea level.
That's right.
So they must have known what they were doing with that hurricane not to alert the public.
That's an excellent point.
Well, get up. Thanks for bringing her on, Frank.
Hey, Sheldon, thanks for pointing her out to me, my friend. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Dr. Wood, we are up to a break here. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this. Because, again, I am approaching this from, I guess, probably, you know, average Joe's type of education and perspective. And what I need to understand here is the bigger picture in terms of this stuff. You know, what was the focus of these direct energy weapons? I assume it was the building, but was it also the hurricane, I suppose? That having been said, there is the music. Folks, stay with us. We are in the middle of an incredible, incredible experience here with Dr. Judy Wood. Her website, drjudywood.com, we're looking at the visual evidence, the photographs and whatnot, and explaining, trying to understand, again, why this thing happened the way it did. And from everything that I'm hearing, I got to tell you, I see a lot of validity in this. I really do. And it's amazing to me that here we are so many years after the fact, and I'm just now being able to see some of this stuff for myself. Stay with us. Dr. Judy Wood, more Frankly Speaking Radio when we continue. Welcome back. You're listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio, and I'm your host, Frank Whalen. I'm excited that you're here today. Amazing amounts of information being given out by our guest, and gosh, I just don't want to waste any time. We'll jump back in. Her website, www.drjudywood.com. That's drjudywood.com. And we're in the section labeled Cliff Notes. Dr. Wood, welcome back. And again, I can't thank you enough for this.
Hey, well, thank you. I know this is a lot of material, but
it really is.
Anyone can see that they don't see it.
Yeah, and I would like to contextualize this for the dummies out there like me. Let's say, for example, you wake up and you have your checkbook, and there's a check there, and there's a bunch of holes in it. And you ask your roommate, hey, did you take your hole puncher and punch all these holes? Because I've seen a hole puncher. I know what a hole puncher looks like. I know what a hole puncher's effects look like. And they say, no, I didn't use a hole puncher, I used a pencil. And you're saying, well, a pencil is clearly going to have a different effect. So, you know, that's basically, in a nutshell, how I see this. And you correct me if I'm wrong, but I see this as a simple fact of, if we know for a fact that certain Tesla technologies have certain effects on certain materials, and again, some it would affect and some it would not, well, then we have to look at the evidence provided in great depth, great magnitude by your website, where we look at the photographs and compare the two. And clearly you can see that this might be the only explanation to any extent whatsoever.
I agree.
Okay.
That's where I've come to this. And I would like to note that I didn't know anything about directed energy weapons before I started this. I was into
that gives me hope.
And but the evidence, looking at the data tells you what happened. And the data convinced me that such things exist. That police car at the top, when I saw that, I realized directed energy weapons must exist.
Let me pause here for my own selfish questioning, Dr. Wood, and invite our callers to the phone lines here. 888-747-1968. Sapone, California, welcome aboard.
Hello. Yeah, I was that last photograph you were looking at before the commercial break. If you look down,
what's
from
the
that,
figure number?
Melted. Was that 155?
Okay. All right, got it.
And if you look a little bit below and to the right, you'll see a horizontal filing cabinet halfway hanging out the edge of the chopped off floor. The drawers are open, and it looks like there's stacks of paper still on top of the file cabinet.
Are you talking about 128?
Oh, let me slide over. I'm about 10 feet from the computer.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sure Dr. Wood knows
he's
referring
to. Oh, yeah, it's 128. You're right.
Okay.
It's the crinkled up beam sticking out in the middle.
Yeah, I see what he's talking about.
128. 128.
Yeah, yeah. The floor right below the beam.
Yeah.
You're right.
I mean, those file cabinets are not made of thick metal there.
Yeah.
And
well, certainly the paper as well.
And you see the little stacks of paper, about three stacks of paper on top of the cabinet.
Yeah.
Yet there's this beam not more than 15 feet away that's buckled and twisted.
Yeah.
Well,
that's an incredible thing that you pointed out there, and I'm glad you did. I hadn't even picked up on that. And Dr.
Well,
Wood, I know you are a visual person. You have seen this, and you probably knew that full well when you posted this. Can you explain? I mean, because clearly it's not fire, because paper would have gone up far, far quicker than steel.
If you look at, if you go up to... In the top any section, you can go to the index, and then P for paper, section P. That's figures 94, 95, 96, and so forth. Those are cars that appear to be on fire, but there's paper next to them and under them that's not on fire.
Yeah.
So that's why I say this does not appear to be a regular heat-driven fire, but it's this incandescence or luminescence that... Like figure 97 with the firefighter walking through.
Yeah.
He's not concerned about his pant leg catching on fire?
What the heck? This is blowing my mind.
And at 95, you see paper right underneath the front of the car?
Yeah.
It's not on fire.
Wow.
Good observation.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, I was studying those pictures of the burned cars. I went to the larger sections, got lots more pictures. And the front of the car is totally incinerated. The tires are completely burned away. All you see is the rim. Yet the back half of the car has still got the paint on it, and the tires are still holding air.
New way.
Less than, only about 7 feet away. Now, what's up with that? It's like, you focus a beam of light with a magnifying glass. Burns the hell out of where the light's focused, but around it is unaffected.
Right. Wow. Here's another thing to think about. You've had one of those little horseshoe magnets. You don't see the field around it, but you know there's a magnetic field around it.
Yeah.
Let's say you interfere that field with electrical potential.
Okay.
Weird things might happen.
Well,
yeah.
A conventional thing is, I remember the old CRT color TVs, if you waved a magnet around in front of them, it would screw up the color focus, something fierce.
Right.
And you have to degauss the tube to get the colors back where they belong.
That would give to a picture I bet you've never seen before. Figure 132.
Okay.
Make a large
describe this, if you would.
132. I call this the fish tank picture.
Okay.
We're looking east. It's before Building 7 goes poof, but getting close to that time of day. On the right is WFC2. That's the World Financial Center. One of the ones with a lawn in the front that was covered with dirt.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're looking over the Winter Garden. And you can see WFC1 on your, or 3, I'm sorry, on your left. And you see a little bit of wheat chick sticking out of it. But
yes.
Look at the wall on the right. That north.
Whoa. Face. What the heck is going on there?
Something looks out of phase.
Yeah. I want to describe this for people who are not following along or perhaps don't have access to a computer. Dr. Wood, I would say what this looks like to me, if you were to take, like, let's say a piece of bread and I don't know, draw something on it with ketchup, for example, and then take that and smear across it with a butter knife, it looks like someone has smeared out the windows on the face of this building.
Yeah, like a fish tank.
Yeah.
With water or something streaking down.
Yeah.
That's what reminded me of it when what he was saying, or one of you were saying about a CRT image.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Sapone.
With a magnet.
Wow.
Right, you have to use iron filings to sprinkle on the horseshoe magnet to see the lines of force.
Right, on my FAQ page, I've got some images of that.
And yes.
Down in the W section, the electrical and magnetometer section, there's a picture of a lightning bolt, figure 152.
Yes.
Think about that lightning bolt just moments before it arcs from the cloud to the ground. I bet you if you're sitting down there, the hair on the back of your neck would stand up.
That's true.
You'd feel the potential. So there's a potential in that area, and it's caused by something. Well, you can cause it in your lab with a Tesla coil. That's figure
150. That's amazing.
And that's the same structure as a hurricane. And a tornado.
Yeah.
See, do you remember back when Hurricane Rita hit that there was photographs of the eye of that hurricane and it was pentagonal shaped?
Yeah.
It wasn't round. It was five-sided.
Yeah, very strange.
I went for Ike, too.
I think on the very bottom of my home page, I've got a little movie file, QuickTime movie file of Hurricane Rita that caught my eye back then. And I downloaded it as soon as, because I was anticipating exactly what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
So I grabbed it. And then after that, they covered up this anomaly in it. And then they realized enough people had it that they needed to explain it away as a transmission glitch. But when this energy anomaly, it appears to be an energy anomaly, appears, it diverts the hurricane. At that time, the eye closed up. The anomaly went away around the perimeter, and the eye opened back out again. And that happened only when the hurricane was changing course. It was going straight for Galveston, and then at the last minute got diverted northward. And while it was getting diverted, it's kind of like two straight lines with a fillet between the two lines. And while it was traversing that fillet, that curve, is when these weird things are happening. Yeah, the eye closed up.
Yeah.
It's strange.
Wow.
Sapone,
excellent insights, my friend.
Do you remember that they ran through the entire alphabet and then through half of the Greek alphabet that
yes.
year? And then the following year, there were hardly any storms at all.
That's right.
The fix is in big time.
Well said, sir. Thank you for the call.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Oh, fantastic. I've always said we have the smartest listeners in talk radio.
We do. It's very observant.
And I stand by that.
Cabinet.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic. Well, see, this is why I think a lot of people, again, you know, like you said so aptly at the beginning of the show, you know, when we all saw September 11th, there were aspects that really jumped out and ingrained themselves on us. And, of course, this is planes hitting buildings. This is explosions. This is people jumping out, all manner of things. And again, it's the tiny little inconsistencies in the visual evidence, which should hopefully inspire us all to ask more questions, as you're doing. And I can't thank you enough for that. If you would, though, let's sort of give us an idea. And I understand it's completely theoretical, and I understand that, you know, this is probably something that you've been asked before. And I also understand that this is, you know, exactly what I hate when people do. But just for the ideas to all gel together for us in our minds, explain the use of field effects on the buildings and the connectivity of field effects with the hurricane. Are we seeing two distinct targets being you know, accessed here, or is one the after effect of the other?
One is the weapon.
Okay.
The hurricane is the weapon, part of it.
Oh, the hurricane is the weapon?
Yes.
Whoa. Well, how were they able to target the building so accurately then?
Let's go back to figure 152.
Okay.
Think again about that lightning bolt arcing across.
Yes.
There's a potential between the clouds and the ground. This is an analogy. It's not the exact same thing. But
okay.
This is a visual field that you can see. For some reason, it connects right where it connected. But it could have connected an inch to the left, 5 feet to the left, 5 feet to the right. Why did it connect there? There was something special about that particular point.
Something that draws it in.
Let's say we have a lightning rod someplace.
Okay.
It's grounded. Yep, it might go there. So you can steer that thing.
Hmm.
Now, let's say you can put in another type of energy that would attract it.
Oh.
So you have this field that exists all the way across this picture, but it shows that place to be effective.
I see. So let me, again, jump in here with what I believe is, an example of what you're saying. Would this be comparable to when you see some of these covert ops, the military operations, and they go in and they laze a target? The missile gets fired, but it targets where the laser is touching, whatever the laser is touching. Is that fairly accurate then?
That's one way. Yeah, we do know that piece of information, so you can apply it to here. Yes, in the same sense.
Oh, okay.
So this can be controlled,
okay.
But the environment is much larger. Like, around the circumference of a hurricane, out further is where the field effects are.
Wow.
Like, if you look at figure 158, that was JFK Airport. That's just the other side of the East River.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Now, this is the weather impacts at the JFK Airport there in New York City. And this would be kind of like, I guess, what Sheldon had called in about.
Right. On my Aaron series, I've got a lot more of these on Aaron 10. But this one's an example. The airport reported thunder. It also reported rain. On 9/11, and folks remember 9/11 as being this clear day.
Yeah.
In Manhattan. Newark Airport reported thunder. LaGuardia Airport reported thunder.
Wow.
Want to know something else pretty strange? Look at figure 154.
Okay. Now describe this.
This is one component of the Earth's magnetic field for several days leading... up to 9/11.
Okay.
And on 9/11, and each of those vertical lines represent a particular time on the clock. That first blue line represents when the North Tower got its hole. I'm not going to say when an airplane hit it. Let's not argue about that. Just say when it got the airplane-shaped hole, when it appeared.
Okay.
That's that vertical blue line. The red vertical line next to it is when the South Tower got its hole. Then a little bit over, you see a red vertical line. That's when the South Tower went poof, and the blue vertical line when the North Tower went poof. And then sometime later, that green line, that's when Building 7 went poof.
Hmm.
Now, doesn't it look kind of interesting, the pattern of the Earth's magnetic field leading up to those times?
Yeah, it does. It almost looks like depressions followed by spikes followed by depressions.
Yep. The North Tower is a hole that appeared from north to south. The South Tower got a hole that appeared from south to north. Two towers went top to bottom. One tower went bottom to top.
Wow.
But it looks like it didn't quite bring things back in equilibrium.
Yeah.
Things are still oscillating after that point. There's several other types of charts I have, and I'm going to add some blow-ups of this later. But isn't it interesting that the Earth's magnetic field anticipated for 20 minutes ahead of time, anticipated it was going to get a hole in the North Tower?
Yeah, that is interesting.
And precisely when that hole appears, it's like the V of a chevron.
Yeah.
It reverses direction. And then precisely when the South Tower gets its hole, the curve levels off.
I am just at a loss for words.
And when the North Tower goes poof, you got to, you know, nosedive.
Yeah.
Now, the curve right below that, 156, that's from the JFK airport weather data. That red curve is the humidity. So that in itself doesn't say a whole lot, but I found it interesting what a straight line it is.
Yeah.
From like 7 a.m. to noon. At a minimum, you can say something weird was going on with the weather.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that is astounding. Now, let me ask you, in terms of that, and in terms of this other stuff, why is it that we heard the explosions, the shakings? Certainly, there were aspects to the towers coming down. A lot of people have wondered about this. And again, this even comes from transcripts and audio recordings of firefighters who were in the building saying that they're hearing explosions. How does that factor in with all of this data that we're talking about here?
If you go to Section R, that's one of the... Okay. I don't have the seismic stuff here yet, but what you'll find is that the seismic impact of two 500,000-ton buildings slamming to the earth didn't happen. The impact that Building 7 made, which is got each floor is like the square footage of a football field, and you got 47 stories of this. And if you convert that weight-wise into dump trucks, like Big Mac trucks,
yeah,
it's like 20,000 dump trucks. Now, suspend those in midair and then suddenly drop them.
Mm.
You're going to feel the ground shake and you're going to hear a noise. But it was whisper quiet. It was no more than a jackhammer.
Wow.
When Building 7 went away. I brought that to the attention of NIST because they need to do some explaining. They were using that to say that proves that there was no bombs in the building. Mm. I agree there are no bombs in the building. Because that would make the debris slam to the ground. But we did not have debris slamming to the ground. If you go to Section R,
okay,
this is testimony from the transcripts of some first responders. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read a few of these. They're actual statements. They're talking about an ambulance exploding. It must have had Scott bottles or oxygen bottles on it. These were going off. You would hear air go boom, and they were exploding. Another guy says, the Scott cylinders and the oxygen cylinders were all letting go. They were all blowing up left and right.
Hmm.
And my favorite one, I've followed this guy for a long time, but he recently died. I'm very sorry. This is Rene Davila. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. He was an emergency medical technician. He had a bag with his instruments in. He said, I haven't touched it. Whatever the force was, it was so strong it went inside the bag. I'm wondering, you know, gee, does the instruments look like John Hutchison samples?
Yeah.
He says, But we were there. Vehicle 219 was destroyed. The examiner says, was it on fire? And he says, what? Well, was it on fire? The answer is, fire? We saw the sucker blow up. We heard a boom.
Wow.
These were fire trucks. Other rigs, ambulances, all around the area. There's other testimony of somebody running down the street and cars were suddenly, you know, exploding as they ran past. So there's a picture I have here, figure 103, of one of the firefighters wearing a Scott tank. That's the oxygen that they breathe when they go into fight fires. They're metal, I believe. Now imagine that metal is dissolving.
Wow.
It's going to come to a point where it explodes.
Yes.
Think of how many pressure tanks are in those buildings. You're going to hear boom. But there are really very few booms near the ground. There's no solid things hit the ground much. And it sounds like, you know, some of the video cameras that were rolling, it sounded like sleet or snow.
Hmm.
So the things were already dissolved by that point.
That's astounding. Let me ask you this. I would have to think that if these firefighters are wearing these tanks, and these tanks are starting to disintegrate, and eventually the structural integrity of the tank is compromised, and it pops, it explodes, how many firefighters did we lose because of that thing alone?
It seems that either people were found, you know, there's the remnants that were away from the building, or they didn't find any remnants of anybody at all. And I think the people exploded with the tanks. It's a horrible thought to hear.
Wow.
One of my thoughts is that the only DNA that was found was that of the jumpers.
Hmm.
The people who actually left the building.
Yeah.
And there are very few injured people. Either people were whole or they weren't there.
That's true.
One fellow in the hole of Building 6, you know, with that big core cutout that looks like somebody took a big post hole digger and just cut out the middle of the building. He was in the lobby on the first floor, and the sky went, you know, black, or the lights went out, and he couldn't see anything. He felt a rumble, and then after a bit, the lights, started coming back, and he looked up, and it was blue sky. He was on the first floor of an 8-story building. The people who were standing right next to him disappeared. The building disappeared. He was just right on the edge of it.
My goodness.
He freaked out, needless to say.
Yeah. I'd like to point something out here. I was just talking with Joe there in the studio. And, you know, we're all just captivated by this. It's astounding. And one of the things that had occurred to me as I was watching, looking at some of these pictures, for example, under Section S with the Hutchison effect, figures 111 through 114 of objects being almost placed inside of other objects. This reminds me, I had interviewed a guy who was on board when they conducted the Philadelphia experiment. And, of course, a lot of people say that there is significant evidence that not only was Einstein involved in that project, but so was, of course, Nikola Tesla. And a lot of the accounts that had come out talked about people being almost fused or phased into the deck plates, into the walls, and really just a bizarre amount of almost dementia, which I think would certainly qualify as a mental state after September 11th. We all would assume it would be trauma-based, but do you think that there's something there? I mean, because this is Tesla technology, and we're seeing some of the same things.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the exact same thing. If it's not, mm-hmm. it's mighty close.
Oh, sure.
There's a one-to-one correlation. I call it the JJ series, the Hutchison effect and 9/11. Mm-hmm. It's one of the series you can get to on my front page where I have a whole lot of pictures of, here's one of Judy's pictures, here's one of John's pictures. And this direct correlation with every phenomenon there is.
That is astounding. Dr. Wood, what can I say? You have been amazing, Judy. I really appreciate you holding my hand through all of this, and I hope that you'll come back and do it again with us because, it's going to take some time for all of us to really spend some time on your website and not just be able to process everything we're seeing and reading, but also to wrap our minds around the idea of something wholly new, perhaps, to a great many of us. And, gosh, I hope that people can support you in your work. Of course, your website is drjudywood.com. Is there any other things that you would suggest us to maybe pore over in the interim until we have you back on?
Yeah, the section T that I have, the rolled-up carpet.
Okay.
If the building is going to fail and collapse and fall downwards, it bends around a horizontal axis. The remnants left bent around a vertical axis. They curled up.
Wow. Dr. Wood, thank you so much. You are absolutely spectacular. I really appreciate you. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. We'll have you back real soon. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it here for Frankly Speaking Radio. Whew, okay. Well, drjudywood.com. Stay with the Micro Effect Radio Broadcasting Network. More great shows coming up right after this one. I'll be back tomorrow morning for more Frankly Speaking Radio. Till then, have yourselves a spectacular day.
Through the years of providing water filters to America, you've come to us and we've listened.